makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee, the superb blend you know is fresh, present the Chase and Sanborn Hour. And your host, Don Amici.
This is Don Amici calling the roll for another Chase and Sanborn Hour and bringing you the greetings of those present. Nelson Eddy, Dorothy L'Amour, Robert Armbruster, and the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra, and our two super special guests, Miriam Hopkins and Alan Mowbray.
Say, Don.
Yes, Dottie.
I wonder what my little sweetie pie Charlie is up to on the high seas to Honolulu.
Well, my guess, Dottie, be that his ears are glued to the captain's radio to see what we're up to.
I'll bet he's driven the captain to nervous prostration by this time.
Yeah, how right you are, Nelson. You know, Charlie sent us a radiogram, fellas.
He did? What'd he say, Don?
Well, I'll just read it to you. Quote, from the brig, I was innocent, so help me.
That's a McCarthy beginning, all right.
The scenery from this boat is beautiful, even though the bars of this cell get in the way. Bergen says I deserved it, but could I help it if I pulled the wrong cord and the boat went backwards? The captain is a hard man to do business with. Remember, I'll be talking to you guys next week from the land of Wiki Wacky, signed Woo Woo Charlie.
Say, that's a great message, Don.
Wait a minute, there's a P.S. P.S. Bergen paid for this radiogram, that's why you got it collect. C. Mick C.
Isn't he cute?
Yeah, very cute. And I'll tell you how much it's going to cost you for this radiogram later. May I say to all of you, including Charlie Collect McCarthy, that we hope you will enjoy our show and that throughout the week, you'll remain our friends as well as friends of Chase and Sanborn. In the land of Down Under, Australia, the wide rolling prairie is called the bush. But the men out there who ride the range and round up the cattle are as vigorous, colorful, and lusty-voiced as our own American cowboys. Nelson Eddy sings the Stock Rider Song.
We've been up Queensland's way with the cattle many a day, or many a thirsty, lonely plain. But now we're trotting back on the good old stony track, for we're riding, riding, riding home again. With a yah-ha-hallo, how we thunder as we go, never staying, never drawing rein, never drawing rein. With a stock whip in our hand, we're a merry, jolly, jolly band. For we're riding, 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 riding home again. Journeyed many a road and we've carried many a load. We've waded many a washy creek. We've heard the bittern's boom and the curlews in the gloom, and we've rounded many a steer horned and sleek. With our yah-ha-hallo, how we thunder as we go, never saying, never drawing rein, never drawing rein. After storm and dust and heat, now we're singing, singing in the sea. Oh, we're riding, 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 riding home again. We faced the fearful drought when the world was blotted out, when the dust storm wrapped us round with a cloud. We've staggered thin and dumb past the blackened Russian gun, and we're almost straight to heaven for a shroud. But it's yah-ha-hallo, how we thunder as we go, never staying, never drawing rein, never drawing rein. But the roaring of the hoofs, see the gleaming, gleaming of the roofs. Oh, we're riding, 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 riding home.
Thank you. perfect wedding of words and music is accomplished in Guy Dodlow's composition, Because. Through the years, it has held its own as prime favorite with lovers of music, and rightly so. Nelson Eddy sings it.
Because you come to me with naught save love, and hold my hand and lift mine eyes above, a wider world of hope and joy I see. Under my feet, and I am led through tears and joy to thee, because you speak to me. Because God made thee mine, I'll cherish thee through light and darkness, through all time to be, and pray his love may make our love divine, because God made me mine.
Oh, that was swell, Nelson.
Thanks, Don.
Well?
Charlie isn't here, is he?
No, Charlie isn't here, is he?
Well?
Well?
Well, this sounds like the beginning of a beautiful conversation.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Or does it?
Charlie's on his way to Honolulu, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on his way to Honolulu.
Well?
Well?
Shall we go around again?
No, thanks. I think I'll sit this one out.
Say, Charlie's a funny little fella, don't you think so?
Yes, I do. He's a very funny little fella.
Boy, he sure gets laughs.
Yeah, he sure does.
Well?
Well?
Come on, Don. We're not going to let that little woodchuck laugh up a sleeve at us, are we?
I should say not.
We'll show him we can get just as many laughs without him.
We sure will.
You bet we will.
Well.
Well.
Okay, let's begin.
Okay, let's.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh. As far as we can take that.
Yeah.
All right, Nelson, I'll stand in for Bergen and you stand in for Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, well, why can't I do Bergen? Don, are you insinuating that
No, I just thought your voice is better suited to do Charlie, that's all.
Well, what's the matter with my voice for Bergen? Isn't it good enough?
Oh, your voice is good enough, sure, but can you throw it?
Can you?
I've been throwing it for years.
You certainly have.
Oh, well, Now, look, Nels, let's keep personalities out of this, huh?
All right, all right. I've decided to take the part, Don. I'm Charlie.
Okay, I'm Bergen. Is my hair on straight?
All right, put up your knee, Don.
Yeah, all right, here. Hey, what are you doing, Nels?
Well, I'm just going through with this thing. I'm climbing on your knee.
Wow, do you weigh. Say, are you comfy, dear?
Yes, I am, Lammy Pie.
Boy, have you got sharp knees.
Hey, look. Look, Nels, I think you better sit on Charlie's stool instead, huh?
Why, this little high chair?
Yeah, that's it. Go ahead.
Oh.
You know, I don't think you made that.
Oh, I know I didn't. I'll take your knee again. It's the lesser of two evils.
Okay, now we're ready. Tell me, Nelson Charlie Eddie McCarthy, what have you been doing the past week? Have you been getting into trouble as usual? Well, I asked you a question. Why don't you answer it?
Well, I've got my mouth open. Why don't you put the words in?
Say, you know, this ventriloquism isn't as easy as I thought it was, huh?
You think it's a cinch to be a dummy?
Well, I wouldn't know about that.
Now, look here, Amici.
No, I just meant that Bergen's a genius, that's all.
You can say that again.
Hey, Nels, get off my knee, will you? Maybe Dottie would make a better Charlie. She might not be good, too, but it'd be more pleasant.
Did you call me Don?
Yeah, Dottie. A position on my knee has just become available. If you know any good jokes, we're all set.
Oh, sure, I know millions of them. Only last night I heard a dandy. It's about two fellas named Pat and Mike.
Oh, two Irishmen, no doubt, huh?
I'm not sure. And Pat said to Mike...
Look, do it in Irish dialect, huh, Donnie?
All right. And Pat Bigora said to Mike Bigora... How am I doing, Don?
Awful, Bigora.
And Pat said... And tell me now, Mike, who was that lady I seen you with last night, Bigora?
This doesn't sound promising, Bigora.
And Mike said, that was no lady, Bigora. That was me wife, Bigora. Don't you like it, Don?
Oh, yeah, sure. I've always liked it.
That isn't the way I heard it. I heard it about two fellas named Ming and Tung.
Two Irishmen, no doubt.
Thanks, Dottie. And Ming said to Tung, Honorable Tung, who was the beautiful lady I observed you eating chop suey with last night?
Honorable Tung. That puts a new twist on it.
And Tung replied, Honorable Ming, that was no ladle. That was my knife. Mikey?
Confidentially, it's smelly. And anyway, that isn't the way I heard it. It seems there were two fellas, Tony and Pasquale.
Two Irishmen, no doubt.
Yeah. And Tony said to Pasquale, says, say, Pasquale, tell me something, will you? Who's that the bambino what I see you hanging around with the last night? And the Pasquale said, that's not the last night that she's my cousin.
Well?
Well?
So long, fellas.
The country is full of fellows and gals looking for sure cures for the blues. We have our own private little prescription that's certainly worth a try. Get Dorothy L'Amour to sing a song and watch those corners of your mouth move upwards in a smile. Especially when Dorothy has a bit of tuneful advice called, Go Fly a Kite. All right, Dottie, let her loose, huh?
You'll feel like a feather in the breeze. You'll want to laugh and sing your cares. Go flying on the end of a string. Go fly a kite and tie your troubles to the tail. They'll be blown away in a merry gale. Go fly a kite and toss your worries to the wind. And they won't come back, they'll be too chagrined. Go on, make friends with the sky. Have a talk with the sun. It's the bright way to live, if you'll pardon the pun. Go fly a kite and you'll imagine you're a king. 'Cause you've got your world on a piece of string way up in the sky. Troubles go flying away up high. When your heart is happy, there's no need to sigh. Go fly a kite, tie your troubles to the tail. They'll be blown away by a merry gale. Go fly a kite and toss your worries to the wind. And they won't come back, they'll be too chagrined. Go on, make friends with the sky. Have a talk with the sun. It's the bright way to live. If you'll pardon the wisecrack, I mean the pun. Go fly a kite and you'll imagine you're a king. Cause you've got your world on a piece of string. Just do as I say, and all your cares and woe will fly away.
Just listen to this.
How would you like to get $2,500 in cash, all in one lump, all for yourself? Somebody's going to win it in the easiest contest you ever heard of. So why not you? What's more, 1,500 other people will get crisp new $5 bills to buy new fall clothes or something for the house. And think what you could do with first prize money. Get a new car, send your son or daughter to college, or start buying a home of your own. And that's only one of 1,501 prizes, with duplicate prizes in case of ties. Now, all you do is tell us why you changed to Chase and Sanborn dated coffee in the new silver package. Was it because of the silver package itself, or the richer flavor, or maybe you changed to save money, or because you know this blend is freshly roasted? There are plenty of reasons for changing to dated coffee, so many that during recent years, more people have changed to it than any other blend. Now, whether you changed in the past or make the change tomorrow, it's easy to win. Just take the dated front from a Chase and Sanborn silver package and write on the inside, "I changed to Chase and Sanborn coffee because," and then finish that sentence clearly, frankly, and originally in 25 words or less, and mail it to Chase and Sanborn, 420 Lexington Avenue, that's 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City. The contest is open to everyone in the United States. If you missed any instructions, I'll repeat later. Remember, buy Chase and Sanborn dated coffee in the new silver package and enter this easy contest tomorrow.
We take a deep bow to the South for giving the screen that very talented actress and gracious personality, Miriam Hopkins. And another deep bow to our lovely visitor herself for accepting our invitation to be with us tonight. Miss Hopkins has just completed Warner Brothers' picture, The Old Maid, in which, as always, she gives an outstanding proof of her histrionic ability. She appears for us this evening as Lady Leonora in a radio adaptation of Alfred Sutro's play, A Marriage Has Been Arranged. Miss Miriam Hopkins.
Scene, the country house of the Duchess of Moreland near London. A dance is in progress, but a man and a girl have left the ballroom for the quiet of the garden. We find them there, Lady Leonora, daughter of the Duchess, and her companion, the fabulously wealthy Alessandro Riccardi. For a moment, neither speaks.
Ah, this is the place. Very quiet, secluded, romantic. Music in the distance. All very appropriate and sentimental.
A full moon, a devoted admirer. Oh, I'm afraid the whole setting is almost too perfect.
Too perfect, Lady Leonora? Is that possible?
Well, perhaps I should have said too obvious.
Oh, but why shouldn't it be obvious? There's nothing to conceal, certainly. The Duchess, observe how fondly my tongue trips out the title. The Duchess smiles so sweetly on us as we left the ballroom, as if to say, there will be a notice in the Morning Post. Tomorrow, a marriage has been arranged between...
Aren't you taking a little too much for granted, Mr. Riccardi?
Because I haven't yet proposed? I think not. Since I know you'll accept
me. Why, of all...
Careful, Lady Leonora. Mustn't lose your temper.
Mr. Riccardi, I've met men with little breeding. Men who seem to feel there was a virtue in being insulting. But in all my life, believe me, I've never seen anyone so completely arrogant, so contemptuous, so smugly self-complacent.
Ah, but I have a fortune, Lady Leonora. Crude of me to remind you of it, but I feel sure it will more than compensate for my less fortunate qualities. Do, Please sit down before I make you the formal offer of my hand and fortune, which amounts to a little over 3 millions.
Between 6 and 7, I'd heard, pounds sterling.
Only 3 at present, but we must be patient.
Patience is hard, Mr. Riccardi, considering the fact that you have already dropped 3 millions in my estimation.
At least you're truthful. But now, before throwing myself at your lovely feet, I think you should know something of the man you're about to marry.
If I must hear the story of your life, please make it brief.
Very brief, you may be sure. Lady Leonora, I am a self-made man, as the phrase has it. A man whose early years were spent in drear and desolate places. I was poor and lonely for 32 years. I have been rich and lonely for 10. I have no polish, no culture or taste. Art wearies me. Literature sends me to sleep.
Your personal deficiencies, Mr. Riccardi, are quite evident.
Yes. I will pass then to more intimate matters. In a little town in Russia, a horrible place where there were oil wells, I met the woman I loved. But she ran away with another man. That has been my solitary love affair. And I shall never love any woman again as I loved her. And I think that is all I have to tell you. And now, will you marry me, Lady Leonora?
Not if you were the last man in this world, Mr. Riccardi.
At least that's emphatic.
Yes. And I'll give you confidence for confidence. My mother and I, as you know, are practically penniless. Even this house is no longer ours. But a marriage with a wealthy man, a man such as yourself, Mr. Riccardi, would solve all of our difficulties. And so for the past few weeks, I've done all in my power to wring a proposal from you. It's been disgustingly easy. And since we are both being very frank, I'll admit that it was only by concentrating continually on your 6 millions...
3 millions, Lady Leonora.
Oh, yes, unfortunately, 3. It was only by thinking hard of your wealth that I've been able to conceal the boredom I felt in your company. And now, will you marry me, Mr. Riccardi?
Well, I guess that's why we came to this secluded spot, isn't it?
Originally. But I'm hoping to discourage you. Let me try again. Once I loved a soldier, a cousin of mine, and would have run away with him if my practical mother hadn't packed me off in time. He went to India, and I stayed here. But he's the only man I have loved or ever shall love. Further, let me tell you, I'm 28. I've always been poor, and I hate poverty. So much that until this evening I thought there was a great deal to be said for a marriage with you. Luxury is a thing in life I care for most. Vulgarity, my chief abomination. And to be frank, I consider you the most vulgar person I've ever met. Will you still marry me, Mr. Riccardi?
Why not?
Well, I should think that it would be evident by now that I wouldn't marry you for any amount of money.
Lady Leonora, had it not been for my somewhat eccentric preliminaries, you would have accepted me, would you not?
If I had said
to you timidly, Lady Leonora, I love you. I am a simple, unsophisticated person. Will you marry me? You would have answered, yes, Alessandro, I will.
We have been frank, Mr. Riccardi. Now you're becoming impertinent.
When a woman deliberately tries to wring an offer of marriage from a man whom she doesn't love, she deserves to be spoken to as I have spoken to you, Lady Leonora.
Love? Aren't you being a little old-fashioned?
You've been good enough to tell me of your cousin, whom you did love.
And if I have?
You would have married him if your mother had not prevented it before he went to India.
I most certainly would.
So you see that at one time you thought differently about love. You were very fond of him?
I was extremely fond of him. I was very young.
If I had been he, mother or no mother, money or no money, I would have carried you off. It must be pleasant to be loved by you, Lady Leonore. Oh, well, next to being king, it is good to be maker of kings. Where is his cousin now?
He's still in India. Why?
I will put him in a position to marry you.
You'll do what?
Oh, don't be alarmed. I'll manage it pleasantly enough. I'll give him shares, tips, speculate for him, make him a director of one of my companies. He shall have an income of, say, $4,000 a year. You can live on that.
You're not serious.
Oh, yes. And though men may not like my methods, they always trust my word. You may.
I believe I could. You amaze me, Mr. Riccardi. Why should you do such a thing for me?
I'm permitting myself a gesture.
You do nothing in small doses, do you? What you offer is a very large gesture.
Please, don't let this action of mine cause you too suddenly to change your opinion. The verdict you pronounced before was, on the whole, just...
Did I pronounce a verdict?
Oh, yes. You said I was the most unpleasant person you had ever met, and quite rightly.
Oh, that was an exaggeration.
You said I was the most repulsive...
I didn't say that.
Oh, but you did. And that I prided myself on my repulsiveness. But consider, Lady Leonora, my wealth dates back only 10 years. Before that, I had known hunger and every kind of sorrow and despair. And then suddenly, fortune tossed me all the money I needed. I enriched the few friends I had, and they turned from me because I didn't give them more. My wealth has made me very lonely.
But why... Why do you tell me these things?
Because I'm no longer asking you to marry me. Because you were the first person in all these years who has been truthful and frank with me. And because in the happiness that will, I trust, be yours, I want you to think kindly of me. And I'll tell you what you shall do for me in return. You shall find me a wife.
A wife? I?
You. I beg it on my knees. I undertake to propose with my eyes shut to any woman you shall select.
You trust me with that?
Implicitly.
And if I do, will you treat her to the little preliminaries with which you favored me?
No. I said those things to you because I liked you.
I see. Do you want the lady to have any special qualifications besides, of course, not having a cousin in India?
No. Anyone you choose.
Anyone I choose. Well, then, I have a friend. An intimate friend. I wonder whether she would do.
Tell me about her.
She and I made our debut the same season, like myself. She's recently been her mother's despair.
Because she is not yet married.
Married, yes.
Tell me more of your friend.
Well, she's outwardly rather hard, and I suppose she's a little bitter. There hasn't been very much happiness in her life. And there's one episode in her past that I feel she'd like you to know.
If you aren't betraying her confidence?
Oh, no. She loved a man years ago very dearly. They were too poor to marry, but they vowed to wait. Within 6 months, she learned that he was engaged to a fat and wealthy widow.
Hmm. The old story.
A fat and wealthy widow who was touring through India. She had been proposed to by every unmarried officer in his regiment. She chose him.
In India?
In India.
You know, I have an idea that I shall like your friend.
I hope so. She's quite lonely, too.
You think she may learn to like me a little?
Oh, it's very possible. But I should be careful to tell her all that you said to me at the beginning.
I wonder if that will make any difference to her.
Oh, I think it will heighten her opinion. With what I know of you both, I believe that if she marries you, it won't be entirely for your money.
Listen, Lady Leonora. Listen to what they're playing.
Someday I'll find you.
These little dance tunes. Sometimes, Leonora, sometimes they're very...
Very touching, Alessandro.
Appropriate, I was thinking. Leonora.
Yes?
Leonora, has the marriage been arranged?
Yes, Alessandro. I think so.
Your friend, where is she now?
In your arms, Alessandro.
Nelson?
I am the Mary Patton of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical, from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations both as simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. A lot of news, lot of... Oh, I have to find a rhyme for a lot of news. I've got it. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
Many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. Many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. Many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
I'm very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beings animalculous. But still in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
Still in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
I know our mythic history, King Arthur's and Sir Caradox. I answer hard acrostics, I've a pretty taste for paradox. I quote in elegiacs all the crimes of Heliogabalus. In conics, I can throw peculiarities parabolous. I can tell undoubted rapiers from Gerardows and Sophonies. I know the croaking chorus from the frogs of Aristophanes. Brick-a-kicks. Then I can hum a fugue of which I've heard the music's dinner for. Oh, dear, there's one that's very, very difficult. I have it. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
Whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. Whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. Whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
Then I can write a washing bill in Babylonic cuneiform and tell you every detail of Caractacus's uniform. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
Here in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
In fact, when I know what is meant by mamelon and ravelin, when I can tell at sight a chassepot rifle from a javelin, when such affairs are sortie and surprises I'm more wary at, and when I know precisely what is meant by commissariat, when I have learnt what progress has been made in modern gunnery, when I know more of tactics than a novice in a nunnery, in short, when I've a smattering of elemental strategy. A strategy to... Oh, dear, I think I'm trapped. No. You'll say a better major general has never sat at you.
Say a better major general has never sat at you. Say a better major general has never sat at you.
For my military knowledge, though I'm plucky and adventury, has only been brought down to the beginning of the century. But still in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general. Still in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
Still carries on. It is a pleasure to welcome back Cupid's Catspaw, the very British, chin-up, stout fellow, Mr. Alan Mowbray. Well, Alan, how goes it?
Well, how goes it? It? Aren't you a bit old-fashioned, Don?
Am I?
It isn't it anymore, you know. It's oomph.
Oh. Well, how goes oomph?
Well, nicely. Nicely, yeah.
You don't sound very enthusiastic.
Well, to tell the truth, Don, it all seems a bit futile. Oomph, I mean. I hear mice, tough to the ears with it.
Alan, don't tell me you have oomph.
Well, I wouldn't be without it.
Well, if you have oomph, what's your problem? What are you grousing about?
Well, as I say, here am I, the oomph boy.
As you say.
And Sheridan, 20 miles away.
And she stays 20 miles away.
Yeah, there's a lot in what you say.
Well, must it be Anne Sheridan? Will no one else do?
Oh, it isn't that. I hope I'm not narrow-minded about oomph. I mean, I could be content with a girl who had ork or even eek. No, but since I've acquired this oomph of mine, it's sort of backfired. You know, they all seem to shy away from me. It used to be that I could... Well, I wouldn't want to say that I was irresistible. Exactly.
Well, you shouldn't, exactly.
No. But I used to have a system of my own. The caveman approach, more or less.
The caveman approach?
Yes, more or less. You remember that girl you saw me with?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say I do.
Oh, don't say that, Don. I liked her. She was different from other girls.
Different? In what way?
Well, she'd go out with me, for one thing.
And you swept her off her feet with your caveman approach?
Oh, you should have seen it, Don. I sat down next to her.
Oh, that was daring.
I grabbed her hand.
Yes?
I looked deep into her eyes.
Yes?
And I said, gee, it's been warm lately, hasn't it?
The caveman approach, huh?
Well, yes.
Didn't you even kiss the girl?
What, in front of all those people? Of course not.
What people? Where were you?
Well, at the baseball game.
At the baseball game? Well, that's a great place to make love, that is. Just great.
Oh, now, Don, there's no use going overboard about it. It isn't really great. It's no more than adequate, I'd say.
Well, why in the world did you take a girl to the ball game to make love to her?
Well, you see, I don't understand baseball. So I figured I could concentrate 100% on the girl.
And the girl?
She understood baseball. Unfortunately. Well, I didn't like her much anyway.
Why not?
Well, I couldn't stand the way she laughed. You know, that loud, vulgar laughter, you know.
Well, I never noticed that about her.
No? Well, of course, you weren't there when I proposed. You know, that loud, vulgar laughter.
You know, Alan, I don't believe you've ever really put your oomph to the test.
Well, Donna, are you going to test it for me?
No, but I think Dottie L'Amour might. Dottie?
Yes, Don?
You remember Alan Mowbray, don't you?
Of course. Still carrying on, Alan?
Oh, all right. Go ahead, oomph boy. I'm waiting.
All right. Don't hurry me.
Well, Alan?
Dorothy, come here.
Yes, what is it?
Hello.
Well, hello.
Well, hello yourself.
Say, what is this?
Psst, hey, Alan, her hand.
What?
Her hand.
Yes, yeah, very pretty.
Well, take it, you ump.
Dorothy, would you mind?
What is it?
Well, your hand, you know.
What about my hand?
Oh, nothing. I just thought if you were tired, I could hold it for you or something.
I'm quite strong enough to hold my own hands, thank you.
Oh, do you get much of a thrill out of that?
What are you talking about?
Oh, love and things and sort of.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, wouldn't you like to go with me to some quiet spot where we could sit together and look at the moon?
No, thanks. I've seen the moon.
Oh. Well, of course, it wouldn't be very interesting for you then, would it?
No.
Oh.
So now, if you'll excuse me.
Yes, certainly. Run right along.
Well, Alan, how did you do?
Well, what did you expect? The girl's jaded. She's blasé. No thrills left for her. She's seen the moon.
In other words, you didn't get anywhere, hmm?
Well, that's one way of putting it, yeah.
Oh, well, don't be too sad about it, Alan.
No, I'm not. She's the one that should be sad. If she had only listened.
What would you have said?
Dorothy, I would have said... You hear that throb in my voice, Don? Dorothy, light of my life, window of my soul, in you the morn rises, the sun sets, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China, across the bay. Unquote.
Why, Alan, I never dreamed.
No, Dorothy, it's too late.
But there are tears in your eyes.
I know. I've seldom hurt a single thing. No person, dog or cat. Except people that don't matter. Like the landlord of my flat. And now I'm puzzled and my heart is breaking, you can see. Perhaps you can give me comfort. This is what has saddened me. I've never wronged an onion. I hope I never shall. I've never wronged an onion. I treat it as a pal. Tell me why. I've never wronged an onion. Why should it make me cry? I hope I never shall. I've never wronged an onion. I treat it as a pal. Tell me why. I've never wronged an onion. Why should it make you cry?
When collaborators Benny Davis, Tommy Dorsey, and Ted Shapiro get together, you can be certain that there will be new music in the air. Music that's singable, swingable, and popular. They've just come out with a brand new song entitled To You, which shows all the evidences of becoming a real hit. It's a hit with us, and I hope that after you hear it, you like it too. Robert?
I give all of my heart and my love to you, to you. I bring sunbeams from heaven above to you, to me. You're an angel and you mean the world to me. I'll be forever yours. Your smile made the clouds and the shadows on high take wings. Your kiss was a real inspiration to greater things. My dreams, I'm so thankful and grateful to say, came true. I owe it all to you. I give all of my heart and my love to you, to you. I bring sunbeams from heaven above to you, to me. You're an angel and you mean the world to me. I'll be forever yours. Your smile made the clouds and the shadows on high take wings. Your kiss was a real inspiration to greater things. My dreams, I'm so thankful and grateful to say, came true. I owe it all to you.
Mr. Bannon?
Yes, Mr. Amici?
Will you please take this radiogram to one Charles McCarthy? Master Charles McCarthy.
Master Charles McCarthy?
Yeah, that master will burn him up. Dear Brig Boy, inspired by your former futile efforts, we, your colleagues, have whipped up and are about to fry a dramatic omelet. A large egg entitled A Drama has been deranged. Aren't we all? And sign it, us.
Is that all, sir?
Yeah, that's all. And Senate collect. Curtain.
Scene, the country house of the Duke of Mowbray, gravy on the waistcoat, a ball is in progress, and out upon the fragrant night air waft the strains of a romantic waltz. Beautiful, eh? The Duke Alan of Mowbray sits at the door mumbling. He is troubled and hardly hears his graceful daughter, Lena Leona Lamour, approaching. On horseback.
Tuppence, tuppence halfpenny.
Pater.
Thruppence, thruppence halfpenny.
Pater.
Later. Fuppence, fuppence halfpenny.
Hey, Pop.
Yup. Oh, there you are, Lena Leona, my dear. On all fours. Thruppence. Suppence, apeny.
Father, I want to talk to you.
Go away, I'm counting the gate. Suppence, suppence, apeny. Now, this ball's a flufferoo.
Father, I came here to tell you that I have decided I won't do it.
And I say that you shall.
But, Father, I don't want a crown.
Your whole future depends upon it. I insist that you shall have a crown.
But none of the girls in my set have crowns.
Quiet, child. Tomorrow you go to the dentist and have it put in.
Begging your pardon, sir.
What is it, Meadows Ambruster?
The Baron Ole Nelson Svensson Eddy has just arrived from Sweden. He waits without.
Without what?
His dialect, probably.
Oh, it been a very lovely morning tonight. I just must been come from Sweden to see my Lena Leona. She been more beautiful than the Swedish Ben Nightingale. Bain't she?
Who is this Bain intruder?
My good man, A. Bain, the Baron Ole Nelson Svensson Eddy, Royal Knight of the Square Table, Knight of the Garter, Knight of the Suspenders, Knight of Knights, Knight and Day, you are the one.
Well, bless my soul and confound my nearsightedness, Baron. To what do I owe the honor of your visit to my humble palace? 400 acres, walnut trees, orange groves, it's a steal.
Yes, wait a minute, please. I been not come here to buy your ugly dumpling.
Ah, Baron, you rascal, you. She's all I have left, but take her, my boy. Take her with my blessing.
But A. Bain don't want to take her.
Well, take her without my blessing, but take her. Baron, are you fixed for dough?
Of course not, silly.
Yeah. That was silly of me. Any references?
I used to ask you to do me the kindness once. And listen, once. Would you? Once.
I'll listen. Once.
A. Bain did not come for your daughter's hand.
Well, what did you come for?
I just want her feet.
Sir, what are you, a Swedish chiropodist?
No, by Yemeni. I been a yumping yeterbog. I just want to swing it. Maybe we been cop first prize. I been need money.
You need money? Why, you imposter, you deadbeat breaking in here like this. Throw the big Bain out, Meadows.
Very good, sir.
Now, where was I? Tuppence halfpenny.
Your Highness, there's another gentleman waiting to see you.
Well, who is he?
He claims to be the Count de Gazzola.
Well, show him in. What have we got to gain?
Announcing the Count de Gazzola.
Answer me, head of your service station.
Let's not waste time. Do you or do you want to marry my daughter?
Sure, Pop.
Well, just for the records, what's your name?
My name is Jesus Giuseppe Emilio Giovanni Francesco Paolo Riccardo Pietro Salvatore Roberto Amici Gazzola. We fix flats.
Is that your first name?
Oh, no, that's just my Nixon name.
Well, that's far enough. Have you royal blood?
My blood, she's so blue, I'm a freeze-up.
Then you do come from a royal family.
Oh, sure. I'm a closer relation to the Duke of Aquenza, Francis.
Oh, so? How are you related to him?
Well, you see, it's like this, Chief. My dog is his dog's brother.
Well, that's close enough. You do want to marry my daughter, don't you?
Sure, if the price is right.
Well, if things go right, my daughter is due to inherit $10 million. That is, if her uncle dies first.
Don't you worry, I'll fix that.
Oh, Lena Leona.
Yes, Peter.
I want you to meet your next husband.
Oh, how nice. What's his name?
His name is Giuseppe Emilio Giovanni Francesco. You take it from there.
My name is Giuseppe Emilio Giovanni Francesco Paolo Ricordo Pietro Salvatore Roberto Amici Gazzola, just to call me Joe.
You're very handsome, Joe. I might even learn to like you.
Oh, sure thing, kid. Now let's get married right away, huh?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, come on. Be a good support.
Just as I thought. You only want to marry me because my uncle's going to leave me $10 million.
Oh, no. I marry you, kid, no matter who leaves it to you. How about a kiss, eh, kid?
Sir, what cheek.
Either one, what's the difference?
And now a friend of ours is waiting for this opportunity to tell the latest and most exciting news.
Exciting news is right. Somebody's going to win $2,500 in a big new easy contest. Think what you could do with that much money all in one lump. Start building a house, go around the world, or set yourself up in a business of your own. You can make your dreams come true. But that's not all. There are 1,500 other prizes of $5 each. Crisp, new $5 bills. And the contest is easy. Is your pencil handy? Tomorrow, take the dated front from a pound of Chase and Sanborn dated coffee in the new silver package. On the inside, write these words. I change to Chase and Sanborn coffee because... Then, finish that sentence in 25 words or less. Clearness, sincerity, and originality are what count, and entries become the property of Chase and Sanborn. The decision of our judges is final. Just tell us, why you change to dated coffee? Because of the new silver package? Because it's such a fine blend? Or because you knew it was freshly roasted and rushed to your grocer with the delivery date right on the silver package? Or because it makes such delicious iced coffee? Or to show your appreciation for this Chase and Sanborn hour? Now, those are just a few of the reasons more people in recent years have changed to dated coffee than to any other kind. Buy a pound tomorrow. Enter this easy contest. Send your entry to Chase and Sanborn, 420 Lexington Avenue. That's 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Don't miss out. Go after one of those cash prizes tomorrow.
Nelson Eddy and the chorus give voice to the impressive and thrilling prayer from Wagner's opera, Lohengrin. O King of Kings.
Oh! to be.
We come to the end of another Chase and Sanborn hour, an hour that's made possible by your purchases of Chase and Sanborn coffee. That's the best way of telling us you enjoy our show. We'll all be back next week. Nelson Eddy, Dorothy L'Amour, and Robert Arm Brewster and the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra. And we're going to hear from our perambulating pals, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, direct from Honolulu. They'll both be on the air with us, and we're impatiently awaiting Charlie's report from Hawaii. Also, as our special guests, we will have Wendy Berry and Vera Vey. Until then, this is yours sincerely, Don Amici, saying au revoir.
Don't forget, the cities of New York and San Francisco are making it easy and pleasant for you to visit their two great fairs. In both cities, accommodations for visitors are splendid and reasonably priced, and there's a hearty welcome awaiting you. At the fairs themselves, don't miss the special Chase and Sanborn attractions. At San Francisco's Golden Gate Exposition, visit our colorful House of Hospitality. In New York, see the magnificent Standard Brands Building, featuring our great outdoor marionette show with puppets of Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Don Amici, and Dorothy L'Amour. It's fun, it's free, and you're always welcome. Next week, another big Chase and Sanborn hour. From Hollywood, Don Amici, Nelson Eddy, Wendy Barry, Dorothy L'Amour, Vera Vague, and Robert Armbruster and the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra. And from Honolulu, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Heard on this program were Go Fly a Kite from the Star Maker and The Big Show by Jerome Kern. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.